We are resuming the summary of the tshuvos of Rav Ephraim Oshri in Sheilos HaTshuvos MiMa'amakim, tshuvos relating to the time of the Holocaust, especially in the Kovno ghetto, where Rav Oshri was acted as Rav, and initially he would answer Sheilos, and sometimes we'll see in this particular tshuva he would take them to the author of the Sheilos HaTshuvos Dvar Avram, Rav Avram Shapiro, who was one of the great poskim in Europe at that point in time. In any case, Rav Oshri at that point in time was a very young man and thrust into the most difficult kind of predicament and situation in which he had to answer Shilas of Dina Nefashos. So this tshuva, which is in the first volume, the second Simon Beis, he says took place initially on Chav Zayin Elul Tovshin Aleph, which corresponds to the English calendar, September 19th, 1941. So this is just a couple of days, Chav Zayin Elul, just a couple of days before Rosh Hashanah. And the Jews in the Kovno ghetto, they were asked, that demanded, the Nazis demanded from them that they send 1,000 people to work in the airfields outside of the ghetto. And this was obviously forced labor. They were given very meager rations. He describes a bowl of soup, which was had some, you know, had some kind of meat, had meat in it at the time, but it had meat at one point in time. It was absolutely non-kosher. It was non-kosher, obviously. But this is everything that they were given. And they had but no choice but to do this. But nonetheless, the question arose, when, you know, this is a couple of days after this forced labor began, again on the 27th of Elul. This was Bein Kesel Asor Tavshin Beis. A few days later, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, you can imagine the Jews, they're thinking to themselves that it's now Aseres Yemei Tshuva, and they have to eat this non-kosher soup made from, you know, that was this broth which had been made from non-kosher meat, and they wanted to know if they would be able actually to refrain from eating this soup. The question, of course, is, are they able to do this? Because it might be a question of pikuach nefesh. And it ties in, I'll just mention, ties in with a broader kind of question, which is discussed in certain sources, whether in situations where Jews were forced to do things that were against the Torah during the time of the Holocaust, was that to be viewed as a shasa shemad? During a time of shemad, when non-Jews are trying to corrupt or prevent Jews from keeping the Torah, so then Gemara famously says, even Argasa de Misana, even a custom that seems to be of relative insignificance has to be adhered to. And a Jew certainly is allowed to give up one's life, Akidosh Hashem, in such circumstances. There is a general question regarding to the time of the Holocaust, because of the, it was a complex kind of situation. On the one hand, the Nazis definitely bore a hatred towards Torah as well. And for that reason, they targeted shuls and yeshivas and bate medrash and svarim, etc., in order to be able to, you know, prevent Jews from keeping Torah. And on the other hand, if you look back, it would seem they wanted to destroy Klal Yisrael as a people completely, right? Regardless, as well, to the level of observance that they were keeping. So you can talk at great length in regard to this topic, but the Rav Oshri within his tshuva over here seems to be assuming that it's not a situation in which Jews are being oppressed or persecuted for religious reasons, and that therefore those considerations are off the table. It's simply a question of whether one is allowed to endanger one's life in order to be able to observe, in order to be able to refrain doing an aveiro. Usually the general rule in that case is v'chai behem v'lo shiyamuz behem. In order to be able to survive, if a person, let's say chas v'shalom, is caught on a desert island, and a person has no choice but to eat non-kosher, in order to be able to survive, it's a very straightforward din. V'chai behem v'lo shiyamuz behem, then you set aside the laws of the Torah in order to be able to live. If a person has to be Mechal Shabbos in order to survive, if there's a life-threatening incident, then obviously the same applies, right? We know this as a very important and critical principle of the Torah. So this is the question. So what exactly is the question? What exactly is the question which is being posed? In other words, it would seem that this is an obligation that they have to they have to eat this soup in order to survive. Well, the question that they had was, if they wouldn't eat, they wouldn't be endangered right away. Maybe they would find other things to eat, maybe they would become weakened, but it wouldn't cause a person to die immediately. This would be something which after some time would cause danger to one's life. So maybe, because there's no what we would call imminent present danger to the individual, maybe at least be allowed for the individual to push off eating this soup in order to avoid the Easter against eating non-kosher. So Ravashi begins with the Gemara in Yuma. The Gemara talks about a situation where a person is ill, and obviously he's talking about some kind of serious illness. And what if there's a debate between the individual, the subject, you might say, or the patient, and the doctor? So the Gemara says that if the Chola says that he needs to eat, and the Rofe says, the doctor says he doesn't need to eat, so then we will go with what the patient says. Because there's a principle based upon a pasuk in Mishlei, Lev Yodea Maris Nafsho, that a person knows oneself better. The doctor might make claims, but on the other hand, a person knows oneself best. By the way, I'll just mention parenthetically that in later poskim they point out that if the doctor has objective assessment in which he says that the patient's perspective or conclusion is wrong. Let's say, for example, the patient says that, I definitely have the following, and the doctor says it's not true. We checked. We did tests in regard to it. You don't have that particular illness or that particular condition. Or let's say, for example, the patient says these indications show that clearly, that my life is in danger, and the doctor says objectively that's just not true. So when there's objective information that the doctor is providing, objective assessment with a sense of certitude, then it can be that at times we will defer to the doctor and assume the person's not in danger. But in any case, the Gemara says that if that's not the case, and we have a debate between the two of them, we assume that the patient may know something the doctor does not know. And then the Gemara says, what about the reverse case? The doctor says that the patient is in danger, and the patient says, no, I'm not in danger. So we will go with the doctor at that point in time. We're machmir. In regard to pikuach nefesh, we are machmir, and we'll follow the doctor's point of view. And the reason is because tun vohu nakitle, which Rashi says means like a ruach shtus. The person, is not thinking rationally, and that, therefore the individual is saying it's not dangerous, but in fact the doctor's opinion, we have to assume may be the correct one, and therefore in both cases we're machmir, and we will tell the person that he or she has to eat even something non-kosher in order to be able to, I'm sorry, eat something on Yom Kippur, that's talking about Yom Kippur, we'll tell them that they have to eat on Yom Kippur because there's at least a suffix pikuach nefesh. Now the Rosh here has the following interesting discussion. He says that there are some svarim that introduce different nusach in the Gemara, a different text in the Gemara, and in that text of the Gemara, they say that the psak of Rabbi Yanai, right? It doesn't really require a psak. What's the chiddush of Rabbi Yanai? That suffik nefashos lahakel. There's a general rule. In both of these cases, you have a debate, so therefore it's a suffix. So therefore, obviously, lahakel, you have to have the person would have to eat on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says no, because the Chola says that we might say that when the Chola says that I need to eat, then b'asusehu deka mavis, that he's really just afraid, he's petrified, he's in a state of fear, and he holds savar ilo achil no misna, that if he's not going to eat, he's going to die. So therefore, kamash malon, right, that we don't take that into account, and we don't think that he's somehow crazy. We say that if the Chola says that he has to eat, he feels the sense of urgency and feels otherwise, that he's going to compromise his ability to be able to live. So, we will defer to the to the perspective or the opinion of the chola. We don't say that he's simply afraid. Now, in this context, it seems to indicate that the person is saying, he's insisting that if I don't get food, I'm going to die. In the Rush quotes that there are those who say that you see from here that dafka mishum safik misam achil noso. Only in a situation where there's a doubt as to whether he'll actually die, then we'll give the person food. In other words, the way that it's presented, according to this nusach, according to this text of the Gemara, he seems to emphasize that the person is saying, if you don't give me food, I'm going to die. Right? Then, but that only in that case, it seems that the individual is given food. So the Rush says, and he thinks that this is actually being too machmir. In other words, that creates a distortion in terms of the threshold at which we will allow the person to be able to eat. He says, most of the time a doctor is not going to say, you better give the person food or he's going to die. He doesn't say that. He says, Ein lecha rofe shiomrim lo yochal shema yomus. Maybe he'll die. Rofim, doctors, are even in those days, would be more circumspect and they would be more precise. They would try to, you know, present the possibilities. This is the language of the Rosh. A rofe darko lomar, the rofe, the doctor generally says, im lo yochal, if the person doesn't eat, efsher sheyachbid chol yov yistaken, then the illness may intensify, and as a result, the person will be endangered. So, and then the Rosh goes on to discuss this a little bit more. But the Rosh is saying the following, that we don't have over here, what, you think that the person's only able to eat if Chas Hashem doesn't eat now, he's going to die now? No, that's not the case. He says doctors generally will not say that at all. Well, what might happen is the person will not eat. Then, as a consequence, the illness or the condition will intensify. Person will, for example, become weaker, will not be able to rally the strength, the wherewithal to be able to defend, you know, the body when the body is more worn down. So then, this is how the Rosh understands the halacha, and the Rosh is saying, that's considered pikuach nefesh. So what do we see over here? We see that according to the Rosh, there doesn't have to be immediate danger today to the individual, but even if it would evolve into danger subsequently, right, because the person would become more sick, and as a consequence, the person might die, that's also considered to be pikuach nefesh. And the Tur, who happens to be also the son of the Rosh, is the language in Simin Tov Reish Ches, is very clear. He quotes essentially from his father, im lo yitnu lo, that if the doctor says that if they don't give food to the person, efsher sheyichbad alav hacholi v'yistakin, that it's possible that the individual will become more sick, and the person might become endangered, then of course he give the person food. The Tur and the Rush both use the word efsher. It's possible. He doesn't know for sure, right? But this could evolve into a situation in which this is a distinct possibility. The doctor thinks that this is something which may endanger the individual in the broader picture, and therefore that's considered to be a sakana. Says Avashri, what do you see from here? If he doesn't have to be danger today, it's danger which could evolve later on as well. If the person is going to become weaker, he says, obviously this is going to compromise these individuals who are working this brutal, oppressive labor. These people who are working so hard, and they're weak as it is, obviously this would compromise their ability to be able to withstand the challenge, the physical challenge, and as a result, it would be possibly life-threatening. That's one source that Ravashi brings in order to say that it's mutter. He brings another source as well, which is a little bit more, in a sense, is a little bit more complicated. It has to do with the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Samach Tesom Ed Beis, a very famous Gemara in Shabbos that talks about the possibility of a person getting lost in the desert. And then the question comes up, the person doesn't know what day it is, when does the person keep Shabbos? So it's a famous halacha that the person will count 6 days and then keep Shabbos, right? Designate one day as Shabbos, and you keep it as Shabbos. But nonetheless, we know that the person has a suffix in regard to this. It's a doubt as to when it really is Shabbos. So really, we tell the individual that you work each day, you do whatever necessary that day in order to feed oneself. Let's say, for example, the person has to pull up plants, or the person has to catch animals, or whatever the case might be. You're allowed to do whatever necessary in order to be able to survive on that day. And then he quotes this, he's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch in the beginning of Simin Shin Mem Dalid. There's one of the poskim says that one of the achronim, that if the individual can fast one day, so let the person fast one day. let's say, for example, maybe the person is 7 days altogether, right? So if the person is able to fast one day, and let's say maybe it'll be Shabbos, so therefore the individual should try to fast that day. It's possible, right? Maybe the person, you know, the person would be able to refrain one day, and then we hope that that day is the day of Shabbos, and then as a consequence, the person will be Mechal Shabbos, right? You're only allowed to be Mechal Shabbos in a situation of Pikuach Nefesh. We don't know which day is Shabbos, it's a Safek. So to the extent that we're able to at least create more of a possibility that the person maybe will not do Malach on Shabbos, and it will not cause Pikuach Nefesh, you know, and according to this, maybe the individual should fast for 2 days, you know, let him eat for 3 days, and, you know, or 2 or 3 days, and then he'll fast, and then he'll another couple of days, and then he'll fast, let him work it out, if he could do that. So then he won't have to do Malacha in order to feed himself on those 2 days, and maybe he then will be refraining from doing Malacha on Shabbos, and therefore Chilul Shabbos is not warranted, right? His life is not in danger. So another one of the poskim here, the Big Day Yasha, disagrees. And the Big Day Yasha seems to be saying the following. But the individual in the big picture has to get out of the desert. In the big picture, the desert is dangerous, right? The person can't survive long-term in the desert. That's not really a possibility. You have to assume that that's dangerous. So if you tell this person to fast every few days, right, even once a week, then that will obviously slow down, interfere with the person being able to leave the desert. The person will not be able to have the strength and the focus, the ability to be able to be able to attain that goal with the same efficiency and with the same strength. So therefore, says the Big Day Yasha, you can't make the person do that. The person's in danger. And therefore, the individual is allowed to do whatever necessary each day in order to eat, in order to have one's strength, says the Big Day Yasha. And even if it's Shabbos, we consider that to be Pikuach Nefesh. So what do we see here? We see that the person's not in danger today. The person's not in danger today. The person's not in danger tomorrow. The person may not be in danger for a week or a month. But at some point in time, the person's life is going to be in danger because it's very difficult to survive long-term in the desert, right? It's going to be, how long can it last for? A week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? There are wild animals, there's bad weather, there's terrible, you know, things that could happen. He's all alone. So therefore, the individual, says the Big Day Yasha, can take into account that long-term, bigger picture kind of danger. Not the danger today, but the bigger picture danger, and say, for the sake of Pikuach Nefesh, in order to be able to remove danger that's long-term in a broader context, in order to be able to help the person to be able to leave the desert faster, so therefore the person is allowed to do malacha every single day in order to attain food, in order to be able to acquire food, and therefore the person, and this is considered warranted because Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Shabbos. In this case, it's considered necessary. What do you see over here as well? This source, we don't look at Pikuach Nefesh today, but we look at Pikuach Nefesh as being something more broad. Will there be danger sometime in the future, right? Some undetermined point in time. And to the extent that we have strong suspicion, or we think there's a strong likelihood that the person will be endangered in the future, we consider that to be included in the heter of Pikuach Nefesh. Rav Ashi, towards the end of the tshuva, he has one of the source, which I'm going to leave out for now, but towards the end of the tshuva, he says that he went to the Dvar Avram, he went to the Av Beis Din of Kovno, Hagon Rav Avram Duber Kahana Shapiro, and he agreed that this was mutter. So this is the perspective of Rav Ashri. And I'll just close with the following. That actually, I think that there are other sources as well which indicate that we look at Pikuach Nefesh in a broader kind of way. It ties in, I don't want to spend too much time, and it ties in with other questions as to whether we have, in regard to Pikuach Nefesh, do we have to have the danger in front of us right now? There's interesting discussions in earlier postgame about why autopsies are generally not allowed. In general, general autopsies are considered to save lives, right? They, in the bigger picture, will allow us to be able to collect information in order to be able to save lives. So why is it not considered mutter? So some of the earlier postgame would talk about there's no danger in front of us right now. There has to be a present danger here in front of us, but I noted in another shir that the Chazon Ish had a perspective in regard to this in which he didn't think that the danger has to be present so much as the danger is something which can evolve from the present situation in a clear-cut kind of way. This obviously, by the way, can have relevance in many different contexts, these kinds of questions, you know, in contemporary times. come up as to whether, let's say, for example, what are you allowed to do for the security of the state of Israel and the Israeli army? What if there's not a present danger, but there may be a danger which will emerge? Are you allowed, for example, I think that the Chazon Ish and others would deal with this kind of questions, are you allowed, let's say, for example, to manufacture weapons on Shabbos? Because maybe, you know, the ability to manufacture the weapons on Shabbos will avert danger in the future. Interesting kinds of questions. Obviously, the context and the backdrop the situation is essential in order to for all these kinds of questions. But the Chazon Ish said it doesn't have to be a danger which is here now so much as a danger which is going to evolve. This would mean, you know, that in regard to a chola as well, you know, as we're describing now, the person doesn't have to be, you don't have to look at only the danger to the individual today, but the danger that might emerge from, you know, a person, let's say, for example, not taking care of oneself or taking certain kind of medication or going for certain kinds of treatments, danger might emerge and as a consequence of this. I think that there is a source that indicates that we look at the bigger picture, which is it comes up in Simen Shin Chav Ches, which is the Simen in the Shulchan Aruch, which talks about Pikuach Nefesh. On Shabbos, that's the main Simen in the Shulchan Aruch, which talks about this. And the famous halacha that... question, I should say, as to what happens if a Jewish person is in danger. There's a situation, pikuach nefesh, and a Jew is there who can be mechal Shabbos in order to save the person's life, or you can have a non-Jew do the same thing. So in this context, right, obviously a non-Jew would be able to do it, so I'm saving myself from being mechal Shabbos, and generally assume that if you don't have to be mechal Shabbos, why should you? So I can turn to a non-Jew. In the Torah, there's no Iser. We assume it's an Aser Midrabanan to ask a non-Jew to do Malacha for me on Shabbos. Turn to a non-Jew, and the non-Jew will do it. So there's a debate. Some poskim say that that's a good idea, and some poskim say it's a bad idea. There are two reasons for the poskim who say that are given, for the poskim who are of the position that one should not ask the non-Jew to do it, but a Jew should do it. Either some say that the non-Jew is going to do it less effectively, or it's going to delay, somehow will not give the same attention to it as the Jew would. So maybe that'll have like a more linear kind of impact in the present, in this particular case. So that's one reason which is given. Another post can say, even setting that aside, let's assume for a minute it's something which is so simple and straightforward that there's no real question of whether there's going to be a delay or not, or whether it won't be done as well. Now the poskim say no, because we're afraid that if the Jewish person gets used to the idea that the person's in a situation of pikuach nefesh, and then you turn to a non-Jew and ask the non-Jew to do it, so we're afraid that will cause a delay in the future in another situation of pikuach nefesh, that the Jewish person will hesitate because he'll be thinking, well, the past time or two or 10 times that I've done this, I've had a non-Jew do it, so now he'll look for the non-Jew, and this might endanger a Jewish person's life in the future. Well, this would seem to me to be a very strong support for the view that we don't look at the present. We're saying, according to this shita, which is quoted by some of the Achronim, that I think they quote this from a rush as well, that we're concerned about what's going to happen to an unidentified person sometime in the future, right? That the same Jew will be in a situation where he could save somebody's life, and some unidentified person, and we don't know, it's going to be in a week, in a month, in a year, in 10 years, right? We don't know. But there could be some kind of danger to somebody in the future. An unbelievable, first of all, it's just an unbelievable shita, right? But it shows you ad kedei kach how far we take the heter of pikuach nefesh. This is considered pikuach nefesh. It's an amazing way of looking at things. It's pikuach nefesh for what? For somebody in the future, and as a result, it's matir, right? Doing malacha on Shabbos in the here and now, even though the danger is not absolutely certain. It's only a suffix, obviously. And the danger is at an undetermined time in the future. I would think that this would be a very strong raya as well. So in any case, it is a broader kind of issue, but halacha lemaisa, Rav Ashri comes to the conclusion in this case that these people who are working definitely should be eating, thereby avoiding ultimate danger to their lives that would result from lack of nutrition.